Welcome back to Bench Tested. It is a Ghostbusters podcast where we break down the props, the builds, and the people behind the gear. And today's guest is Chris Hunt. He is the owner of Dragon Workshop. And if you've spent any time in the prop building space, especially on Etsy, there's a good chance you've come across his work. Now, he's been putting out Ghostbuster props and components that hit that balance between looking right, functioning well, and actually being accessible to builders. We're going to get into how he got started, what pushed him into building and selling, and how he approaches designing his props and what it really looks like running a shop in this space. Chris, welcome to the show, my man.
Thank you, Charlie, for having me.
What was your first real connection to Ghostbusters and what pulled you into this fandom?
As a child of the 80s, the original movies.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
Ghostbusters 1 and 2. I think that I wore that VHS out. same with Indiana Jones and Short Circuit and a few of the others, but Ghostbusters always stuck with me. So when I saw the HasLab Proton Pack come up, I couldn't resist. That was accessibility prior to that was so hard for something to look decent. And I had passed on the Innovos because I had connections in the prop community and knew that they were going through some questionable issues. But Hasbro, I mean, it's like, you know what? It may not end up being as good as I want it to be, but damn, that looked nice.
Right? I missed the pass when it came through. I didn't jump on it. I'm still mad that I didn't do that. But I want to know, what was the turning point for you when you went from fan to builder? What was it that set you in that direction?
I went from military to private contractor to artist. And I had done a few things for my pack. And some people said, hey, I really like that. Can I get one? And I was like, well, I have this Etsy shop that I haven't really been using. So sure, I'll toss an item or two up there. And next thing I knew, as I was building stuff for myself, other people were going, hey, I really want that. So it just kind of grew. It was very organic.
What was the first thing that you ever built? Looking back on it now, how did it turn out?
My very first thing was probably garbage. I'm a very iterative builder, so I'll build something and play with it. And if I don't like it, it goes in the trash. So there is a graveyard of forgotten or put aside projects or projects that don't quite, I feel, meet the requirements to show off and push that chance. The very first Ghostbusters thing that I upgraded on the Proton Pack was the Iron Arm faceplate, because the one that came stock was just flat. And so I catted up the replacement, reverse engineering off the original using some calipers, and within, I think, two iterations, hit the nail on the head. I eventually made it to Mark V, but those were just fine tuning. I put the file out there for dirt cheap and saw a whole bunch of people steal it and claim it was theirs.
Oh, no.
So sold them as well. But, you know, I don't actually mind that. I didn't call anybody out on it. I'm just happy that more people got parts on their packs, to be quite honest.
So how long have you been doing this exactly? I know that you started, you know, it was back in the 90s, right?
With 3D, I started again in the 90s. So our tools back then were pretty rough.
Oh, man. You were at the forefront of it all, huh?
Yeah, I got to play with SketchUp back when it was in beta, and it's far from beta now. Played with Blender when it was in beta, long before public release. So no, I've always been intrigued by 3D design software. So I do still use SketchUp pretty religiously along with Blender and SolidWorks. Depends on the part and what the final production method is going to be. Like if I'm having something stamped in metal, it needs to be SolidWorks because, you know, bend radiuses and all of that. Or if it's going to be CNC, it's got to be SolidWorks. I may still do up a rough form in SketchUp, but then I'll turn around and rebuild it from scratch in SolidWorks just to make sure that everything is copacetic.
Now, when you're designing a proper part, what is your mindset? Like, are you chasing screen accuracy, usability, or both? How does that work for you?
I try to split the difference. So I look at this. I look at the reference library and some of the not publicly available photos that friends and stuff have taken on their tours. And I try to match as best as possible or at least get in the ballpark before then trying to dial it into the end use. So like the faceplate for the Ion. I know it's not perfectly screen accurate, but most of my little chips and dings on it are derived from the screen captures from Afterlife. So you got to work within the bounds that you have. So your space is pretty limited on what you can do, and you just kind of push it as far as you can within the bounds of the tech. Like resin has certain requirements. I don't deal with filaments, so I don't have that limitation. Not as a disparagement to people who do. I think that filament's great for a lot of things, like the Q pack and similar file sets of bigger things. Filament is just the better logical choice. But for little prop stuff, switches and faceplates and all of that, I would much rather prototype or do them in resin than filament.
Now, you're selling to builders, not just collectors. How does that change the way that you approach your designs?
Making sure that they're durable. Like, you can't just get cheap. You can't just get the $20 special standard resin. You have to get stuff that's ABS-like or nylon-like or blends thereof to make sure that the end user isn't going to get something that breaks.
Yeah.
And if it does, I always stand by my work and I'll send out a new set. It's just a sticking point for me. I've had too many times over the decades working in the prop industry, not like for the movies, but just being involved in the RPF and other communities and seeing builders that don't stand by their work, and it drives me nuts. You drop it and it shatters and they're like, well, my recommendation is to grab some Bondo. I'm like, that's just not the answer. It shouldn't be the answer.
Because everybody's going to go grab some Bondo.
Right. And I get that the assumption is that if you're talented enough, if you know the places to look for the prop makers, that you're able to fix it yourself. But I've had a philosophy that my customers shouldn't do.
Yeah.
So it's different. It's not trying to sound elitist. It's just, you know, I don't want my people to have a bad experience.
Right, because you're out there providing a product that you want to stand behind, and you know, anybody. Everybody should do that. You know, you would think that they would anyway. But I want to ask you, what is the product? Looking at your lineup, right? You've got a bunch of great stuff on your Etsy. What is the one product or several that you make that is the most popular? Which one is it that resonates with you?
Recently, the most popular thing that I've made is the pack finger. It's simple. It's basic. I actually co-op that one with my wife, and she does the wood cutting for me. I do the finishing work. But no, those sell fast. I had no idea.
I've got one of your pack hangers and I love it. I do. And it's so funny you mentioned that, because I was going to bring that up, but you know, let's get into it now. I have one of your pack hangers and I love it. I have my, it was my first pack that I built. Did I build it? It was a spirit pack, but the first pack that I modded, I'll put it that way. And you know, there's a lot in there. It weighs probably about 25 pounds. I mean, it's not light, but you know, it's not as heavy as some packs are. But I wanted something that was going to be durable, and you guys provided that. And I just put some wall mounts in and hung that on there, and man, it looks great. It is modeled after the one that's in Frozen Empire. Is that right?
It is.
Cool.
I'm pretty sure I'm either close to or dead on the wood size and the hooks that I use. I'm not going to take that to the bank for obvious reasons, but
I think you did great. I think you nailed it.
Out of all the commercial available wood sizes and hook sizes, that seem to be the right combination.
See, and that's important too, that you offer something like that, because some people out there, they want something that's going to help show off the work that they put into a pack, be it a spirit pack, a fun.com pack, or maybe, you know, something that they're building, maybe a Q pack or, you know, anything like that. That's just the icing on the cake when it comes to showing it off to your friends and family. They're like, oh man, that's legit. That looks real.
And having something that isn't going to break, once again, that goes back to my whole ethos with prop building.
Yeah.
I don't want something that's going to go out there and not perform for you. I want you to be able to hang a 50-pound pack on it and not have to worry about it breaking.
Yeah.
I can't make any promises with your with the screws you use to put it on the wall, but I can say that the wood and the hooks should be okay. You
know? Yeah, no, for sure, man. I made sure to put some big hefty, I think I overdid it. I think I put like 50-pound wall hangers in there, but you know, hey, whatever. It's good and durable. So if somebody wants to, you know, some kid wants to go up and pull on it, I think it'll be okay. I think the kid could probably hang on it with the pack at that point. But again, don't try that at home, guys. So yeah.
No, I have. I will admit, I have. I'm not a light guy by any stretch of the imagination.
Same here.
And my pack hanger is one that I make. Mm-hmm. It's mounted to a steel mesh in my pack display. And I've grabbed it and used it to pull myself up when I'm sitting on the ground fiddling with something on the back.
So you have put it through its paces.
Yeah, I've stress tested it a bit.
That's awesome, man. And I've got to ask, I need to see pictures of your pack setup and how you got it displayed, because that sounds like it's awesome. Do you have it set up like they did in the movie, sort of like in the charging area with the yellow steel, the mesh that you were talking about?
Sort of. I took a IKEA, I can't remember the name of the case, I apologize, and I know I'd probably mangle the Swedish word for it anyways if I could. But it's not an unpopular case to use from IKEA. It's got kind of a 50s retro vibe. It's the wide version. Oh, Fabricor. There we go. The Fabricor case, the wide version, I went on online metals and had a piece of steel mesh cut to the size of the back glass.
Oh, okay.
And overlaid the black the back glass with it after painting it that safety yellow orange color.
Yeah. So you didn't remove the glass, you put the mesh over it?
Correct.
Nice.
I liked that it helps keep the dust off the back.
Yeah.
Not that the dust doesn't add a little bit of weathering in its own way, but you know.
You know, it's funny you say that, because I've been weathering my pack all day. I have started building an 89 pack, and I figured, you know, nice. After 5 years, it's you know, in theory, right, it hadn't been used much, or maybe it has until they got sued or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
It's just been sitting around. So I got some, I'm not even going to try to pronounce that name because I'll probably screw it up, but Vallejo, it's the pigment stuff. Yeah, the pigment powder. That's mostly used for like models and stuff like that, but I've just put that on some brushes and just kind of dusted all over and just kind of gave it that, like, it's been sitting around the shop, not being messed with. It's got a little bit of rust dust types on it, but yeah, I think, you know, again, it goes down to what makes a pack yours. And I think in this day and age, you know, there's so many people out there who are dead set on, no, it's got to be screen accurate. I don't think that's necessarily the case. Do you feel that way with your stuff, or do you try to keep it as accurate as possible?
You know, on my personal stuff, I aim for closer to screen accuracy.
Okay.
Some of my parts are specifically built around that. Like when I'm doing cable runs, they are designed to be more screen accurate.
Mm-hmm.
I know you can go online and pick up a wand pack cable from a handful of vendors, and they all make great product. Mine are a little bit more artsy in that I try to aim for, even for the drop-in, something that's more screen accurate than the rest of them aim for.
Okay, that's so awesome.
I do not discourage other people in our like Ghostbusters group locally who go off on wild directions for their packs. I think they're incredible. Somebody on a Ghostbusters Discord that I consider myself friendly with, they ran LEDs through all their tubing, and it looks killer.
Oh, nice. Like, so it looks like a proton stream.
Yeah, it's not for me, but like, oh my God, if I wanted to go with something out of this world, I think I would copy him, because it's just epic.
I think I had seen someone do that, and they had it to where their pack was on the wall, or maybe it was a wand. They had a wand on the wall, and they had, yeah, those LEDs, or those strip wire that changes the color. It looks real smooth. going across the, yeah. the wall and just, I mean, oh man, it looked killer. Yeah, it was awesome. It was amazing. So yeah, what people do like that, like that's just beyond me. It's awesome.
I've even seen some killer crossover things from like the IDW comics or some of the cooler gear from the 2016 movie, which I know is controversial to a lot of the community, but it had some cool gear. So it's neat to see people's unique spin and how embracing the Ghostbusters community as a whole is. I know, like you said, some people get a purist and it must be 100% correct, but I love seeing the unique spins that happen out there.
What's the one build or product that you've done that you're especially proud of?
Ooh, that is a hard question. My charging boxes. They're not a popular product. They're expensive. Mm-hmm. They're time consuming for me to make. They're 90-ish% accurate, I think. I know that I don't use the correct color, the correct base color of box, but I'm always really proud when I nail the holes. It sounds silly, but there's so many mounting points on those things that getting them all perfect so that it doesn't require putty and all of that work afterwards is very satisfying.
Yeah.
So from a sheer pride standpoint, every one of those that I produce and knock out, I'm stupid proud of.
I think you hit the nail on the head with that one. I mean, it looks perfect because I don't think there are, at least that I've seen, and you may have seen different photos, but I don't think that there are really any like dead on close up photos. And I think with, you know, what you got, at least from what I've seen in the reference library, you hit it out of the park, man.
Thank you. And I provide alternate stickers based on some not in the reference library photos. So when people get them, they're always surprised that there's alternate stickers. And there's the shutdown sign that the NYPD put ends up in there. So.
Oh, yeah. I like that.
I got a good screen grab of that and recreated it along with some NYPD tape. So it helps sell the, you know, they get a little bit of an experience when they open it up.
Yeah, and, it's that authenticity.
Yeah, that was a lot of pride. And my lifeguards.
Oh,
you can drop
yeah.
one of my lifeguards next to an actual lifeguard and they're very hard to tell the difference. I should update the Etsy photos to the newer model because there's not any real file adjustment, but I found a resin blend that comes out almost the correct lifeguard yellow. So that then when I paint it, it looks perfect, and when it weathers, it weathers very organically, if that makes sense.
Is it a different safety yellow, or what kind of yellow is that you've had to find a way to replicate?
So I do use like a safety yellow as the resin base, and then it's sprayed over with a combination of a couple different yellows to get the same luster that I saw when I was modeling the original. So I could go into like, this is how much of this color and that color, but honestly, I don't think many people would be interested in me breaking down paint ratios.
I know that I've seen some people out there, especially like when it comes to like the bumper yellow, they've been trying to find a way to match that. And I saw an interview with Ben Hall, who worked on Ghostbusters Frozen Empire over in the UK when they were over there shooting. And he had made a mention that it was kind of a yellow, I guess it was a New York yellow, I guess is the best way to describe it, with a hint of orange. And he couldn't think of a way to describe it. But other than that, just because it was the yellow, I guess, that New York used on a lot of their signs and stuff like that. So, yeah, it was interesting seeing like people really try to get down to the nitpicky part of it. Like, oh, what color is that? It's got to be on a palette somewhere. What is it? Yeah, it's not the case. They custom made it.
And you get answers like that sometimes that you don't expect when you're talking to people from the film industry.
Yeah.
Same with the gaming industry. I've met a lot of people from that because most of my sideline is fantasy work. So
man,
those are always interesting conversations.
If someone listening wants to jump in today, what is the simplest way for them to get into modding or building a pack?
Buy a good set of digital calipers and learn real software, not just Tinkercad. Like, I don't care if it's SketchUp or Blender or SolidWorks. All of them are fairly budget friendly, especially if you're a student or a veteran. Blender's free, SketchUp is free. SolidWorks, I think, is 50, 60 bucks a year if you're a veteran or a student. And learn the software. Don't get disparaged if you're having issues with more than a slightly complicated box. Everybody starts somewhere. When I started out back in the 90s, there was no tutorial videos. I don't think that people realize that my bad habits that work for me aren't necessarily something that I want to pass down, more because there's so much better ways of doing things if you learn it that way from the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's tens of thousands of hours of tutorials on YouTube for prospective modelers, but the calipers and the software are the big important part.
So how do you balance running a shop, managing orders, and still having time to actually create?
That is an interesting balance. There are days where I don't get a lot of design work time in. You kind of have to be in the right mindset for that anyways.
Mm-hmm.
And have a set endpoint in mind. Like when my Afterlife switch, one of them broke, the red switch.
Oh, yeah.
I can't remember who makes it. An awesome guy over in the UK. When that broke, I had to figure out, okay, so I don't want to copy his, but I need to make this myself so that I know that if it breaks in the future, I can just print one off and have one, right?
Yeah.
So you choose the goal. Then you look at what references you have without copying another maker. That's a big one. So I went out and I bought one of the baseline switches. It's like, I'm not going to not use the same switch base, but I don't have to copy his work.
Yeah.
Bought the switch. Busted out the calipers, reverse engineered the switch so that I could make a custom top piece to it. Found out that I really loved Maya Red for the color and came up with my design take and printed it out. I made a few dozen, some for friends, mostly just for myself. But yeah, that's my big recommendation. Choose the goal, have a very specific goal on what you want to accomplish, and start the design work. I do bigger projects that way too. So like when I was doing the drop-in hose and fittings for all the little hoses on the pack, I just chose one, worked on it for a day or two, went to the next one, and just kind of worked my way down the line.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's just the kind of the basics that I think some people just kind of maybe overthink a little bit. And it's something that is just right there, right in front of your nose, right?
Yeah, it's like the old saying, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. There you go. Haven't heard that in a long time. Yes.
No.
So, okay, so this, how has the Ghostbusters community influenced what you build or how you operate your shop?
Oh, wow. It's completely changed. It has completely changed my month-to-month workflows. So since I still consider myself primarily a fantasy artist, I spend most of each day working on that. But then I spend an hour or three playing with design options and otherwise working on Etsy parts. So this is what I do. I don't have a secondary job. Props take up, I don't know, probably about half the income. So it is an important part of my life.
Yeah.
I can't not plan around it. Keeping the Etsy outstanding order count fairly low and giving myself wide delivery times is important to managing that time. I think too many makers give themselves super short timelines. It ends up leading to burnout. You see some great makers that come and go in the community because they're like, well, I want to have it out like Amazon. So customer orders and I have it out in a few days. I'm like, whoa, man, put on the brakes. You're a human. You have human stuff going on. All of our lives are complicated. Put it out there for a couple weeks. And I know that as a customer, that's like not what you want to hear, but I'm not a factory in China.
Yeah.
I'm not even a factory here in the US. I'm one guy chipping away at making parts every day.
Right.
There isn't a day that goes by that I'm not making something or working on some aspect of some product. So that is the big takeaway. Like, and my recommendation to budding makers, really pace yourselves. Like, it is so easy to get overwhelmed or to accept too many orders or any of that. Like, I've done it. I've had to burn out. You know, if anybody who makes for a living does that at some point, But if you pace yourself and you make sure that when a customer orders something that you have the materials on hand, or you immediately order the materials so that you have them on hand, you'll eventually be treading water and eventually you'll get out ahead. It's just, you have to be smart.
Now, looking ahead, are there any new builds or products or directions you're excited to explore?
I'm really excited about the 84 pack because I'm curious to see how much of the parts transferred over one-to-one from the Afterlife pack.
Oh, yeah.
Some of them, we have guesses that they reused the molds, but Hasbro's been on the record in the past saying that they destroyed the molds. So what is actually true is a big question. I'm excited for my metal bumper. That's going to be a big one, I hope. And I'm playing with a new cable, but I don't want to go into much detail because if it doesn't work well, then only me and the guy who commissioned it are going to know.
There you go. Yeah, you got to keep some things under wraps. I get it.
But no, the bumper is the big one right now. And I'm working on a replacement that's a drop-in for the Hasbro launch. I have it dialed in for resin. It's not quite there yet for metal production, but that's going to be an option.
That'll be awesome.
Yeah, it adds the ability to snap on a max grip. I've worked with GP Star as well to integrate their little IR receiver and sender into the front of it.
Oh, nice. For the GP Star too. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a very exciting option. Because if you think about it, then all of a sudden your IR receiver sender is right there near the tip of your wand, where it kind of makes sense to be.
Yeah.
You're picking up whatever.
Yeah, no, yeah, I think it's cool that you do that because there are, you know, especially showing the, oh, what do they call it? The the PSTT.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That's just cool because that just gives people the opportunity to really bust some ghosts, especially like with the kids, right? When they're coming up and you got some Ghostbusters out at events, you got that. And with what you're adding to it, I mean, that's just going to allow for those types of functions to really, really expand and really show off.
Yeah. And to feel more natural.
Yeah.
Like when they're aiming at something, hopefully this aim helps the aim a little.
And you know what? Whatever helps the aim. That's all. That's what it's all about in the end when it comes to being a buster. So if you had to give one straight up piece of advice to somebody trying to turn this from a hobby into something more, what would it be?
Pace yourself. I know I've already said it, but that's my big one. Do one thing and do it well. And then don't be the kind of person that is not delivering what you say.
Yeah.
Really easy to get caught up in the excitement of your work worked really well and you want to share that, but make sure you can do it twice.
Right. And also do not go broke. That does nobody any good.
Yeah, that is harder. I know that everybody's like, you have to make sure that your profit margins are XYZ. And it's like, well, that's great. But if I push the profit too high, all of a sudden it gets even less affordable. And some of my stuff is not very affordable, but the build cost is also really high.
Right.
So I don't know how to better balance that. But going broke doing props is entirely possible, yes, if you're not careful.
If you don't pace yourself.
If you don't pace yourself, yes.
That's awesome. Chris, my friend, I appreciate you for being on the pod, and I got to ask you one last question. For those Ghostbusters out there who are looking to start a pack for the first time, what advice do you have to give them?
I would just say that if you need any help, I'm happy to help. Point you to whatever tools or resources that I think that are best suited. I'm usually pretty approachable, either through Facebook or the different Ghostbusters Discord groups. I'm in a lot of them, not all of them, but feel free to reach out.
Nice.
I'm not going to tell somebody, no, I do this for a living, so I'm not going to help you. I'd rather see more faces out there that are bright and shiny and happy than people going, well, crap, I don't have to get into this.
Where can they find you? I know you're Dragon Workshop over on Etsy. Where else?
I'm also Dragon Workshop on Facebook, although I stick to the fantasy work there. Otherwise, just track me down.
There you go. Track him down.
On Facebook. I'm in most all of the Ghostbusters groups. It's not hard to type in a search for Chris Hunt and come up with some crazy thing that I've done. And feel free to message me.
That's perfect, my man. I appreciate you We'll get into more of what Chris has done here coming up. You can also see, we'll even post over on the Zedmore Industries page some photos of stuff that you've done and maybe some stuff that you got coming up that you could send over. We'd love to showcase that, and people can reach out to you over on Etsy. And check out that pack hanger, guys. That's, if you're looking for something to display that pack on, you got to go check it out. It's the number one seller for a reason. Just make sure you put good wall anchors in, because we don't know how heavy your pack is, and you don't want anything to happen to it. So there you go. Awesome, Chris. I appreciate you, my man.
Appreciate you too, Charlie. Take care.
That'll do it for this pod. And don't forget, coming up next week, we got Chris Nance, Greg Burke with the NorCal Ghostbusters. We're going to talk to them about pack love, all the stuff that they got going on with their packs. They're building them. They're showcasing it all on YouTube. We'll get into that. Plus, if you've got a spirit pack, doesn't matter what size it is, maybe you got a fun.com pack, we'll talk about all the ways that you can mod it and get into the hobby and really make it your own. That's what it's all about. Plus cosplay stuff. It's all coming up next week on Bench Tested.